The following is a lecture entitled How to Become Truly Happy, given by His Grace Sriman Sankarshan Dasadhikari, recorded on July 4, 2015 at Rupanuga Vedic College in Kansas City, Missouri, USA.
So today we have a very special topic, which is actually quite relevant for everyone. How to become truly happy in life. We're reading from a great book called The Nectar of Instruction, which is written by a great saint about 500 years ago. His name is Rupa Goswami, and it's a wonderful book. It's a very short book, but it's very deep with meaning. But first of all, to create an auspicious atmosphere, we will chant this mantra.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
First, we will read the Sanskrit verse. If you'd like to follow, you can repeat after me.
Vatsya vegam manasa krodha vegam. Jiva vegam udaro pasta vegam. Etan vegan yo vishahete dira. Sarvam api mam prithivim sashishyat.
The English goes like this. A sober person who can tolerate the urge to speak, the mind's demands, the actions of anger, and the urges of the tongue, belly, and genitals, is qualified to make disciples all over the world. So what is the practical meaning for us here in our regular daily lives? We're trying to... Everyone wants to be happy. Everybody would like to realize their full potential in life. But the fact is that most people are not, they don't feel completely satisfied. They feel frustrated. They don't feel they've met their full potential. So this actually is a very important instruction to help anybody who'd like to really, you know, be all that they can be. You see what I'm saying? So, what's the basic principle here? The basic principle is we first of all have to really understand who we are. That's where it begins. It's called knowledge of the self, to actually know who you are. If one has a very clear conception who I actually am, what is my real identity, then they can always act and feel and speak and think in terms of that identity. If they have a very clear conception of who they are, then they're not overwhelmed by circumstances. If one is unsure of themselves, then they make so many mistakes. They become bewildered by so many situations. So the most important thing, actually, the most important education, which is not being given in today's world, is knowledge of the actual self. For example, there's one scientist, he says that actually we're just robots. We're not really people. And this is a leading scientist who tells us we're not really people, we're just robots. You're not really a person, you're just a machine, you see. Now, and he's being accepted as a leading scientist in the world. But if I tell you that you're a robot, you wouldn't like that, because you're not a robot. You're a person, you see. So there's some major problems in our education, in modern-day system of education, because this scientist actually says we're robots. And it's accepted by many people that we're actually robots. We're not really human beings. We're just machines. Like you can wind up a little toy doll, you know, wind it up and it runs around and does things. We're some kind of wind up dolls, you know, we're not really. But the fact is we are persons. We have feelings. We have emotions. And robots don't have feelings and emotions. They don't. The most important thing then is to understand that you're not a robot. So what is the actual nature of that personality, the non-robot personality that you are, you see? To actually understand that in full, completely, that is called self-realization. It's a very important science which is not being taught in the educational institutions. I remember I was a young college student and I spent 2 years studying a wide variety of courses in a liberal arts school. But what I really wanted to know, who am I? What is the purpose of my existence? And they weren't teaching me anything about that in the classes. So then I said, but you have to choose a major. So I finally chose a major. I decided to go into drama to be an actor because the theater kind of fascinated me. It had a magical aura about it, the theater. I attended one production called The Glass Menagerie, and it was amazing. The mood that was created, it became like a reality. So I was thinking, well, maybe drama would be good because I would forget about all my depression and miseries. I can just get absorbed in drama. So for a period there, as my junior year, I was very excited. Oh, I'm going to be an actor. I transferred to a big school, a big drama school, the University of Texas, Austin. And I was excited. Yeah, I'm going to be an actor. I used to sing that song on the way to school every day. I was so excited I'm going to be an actor. Yeah. But then one of the graduates of the school came and he told us what it's like to be an actor in the real world. And I went, oh my God. So then again, I had a temporary sense of identity. I am an actor, I'll be an actor. So that gave me I was looking for identity and it gave me some feeling of joy to have some identity. But then I realized it really wasn't my cup of tea, you see, or a cup of dal, as we say in ISKCON. And again, I was again thrust into identity crisis. Who am I? What am I going to be? You know, nothing seemed to be right for me. But then I was in the break room at the University of Texas Drama School, and one of the fellow students, Bob Singleton, I actually reconnected with him recently. He told me about something called self-realization. So there are great sages in India who achieve this state called self-realization. I went, wow, that sounds just what I'm looking for. So I got some book and I read about it. It sounded just like all I wanted. But the trouble was, the book didn't give me the information I needed how to actually become self-realized. You see, that was the problem. So I was looking, I began a quest that went on. This was in 68. So actually, the spring of 68. Actually, more like the fall of 67, yeah. So I began a quest. That quest took me 3.5 years. I was looking for a teacher that could actually teach me how to become self-realized. Understanding that's what I have to do. Got to become self-realized. I met many who claimed to be teachers. One teacher said, he said, you are actually God and we're all God. You see? Well, I tried that, but it didn't really work, you know, because God's supreme. He's in control of everything. And wow, if I'm God, then why do I have to go to the dentist office? You know what I mean? Didn't make sense. But finally I found a teacher who taught self-realization in such a way that really made sense. You see? I went to another teacher. I got initiated by another teacher. His disciple taught me this mantra, Aang, Aang, Aang. I was told to chant it silently 20 minutes a day. I was going, you know, you're supposed to become self-realized by chanting Aang, Aang, Aang. And I tried it, but nothing happened. I was going, Aang, 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 Aang. Like a, you know, like a, an airplane taking off down the runway, you know, the airport. Aang, 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 Aang. But it never lifted off. So again, I was frustrated. The first guru told me I was God. The second guru said you got to say Aang, 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 Aang. Actually part of the Gayatri Mantra. Aang, Gurave Nama. But it didn't work. If you want to become self-realized, the teacher himself has to be self-realized, you see. Somebody may pose as a self-realization teacher, but if they are personally not self-realized, it's just hype. It's not like an academic thing, you know. 1 + 1 = 2. It's a whole, self-realization is a different kind of science. You have to actually be situated in self-realization in order to teach somebody how to do it. You can't, it's not academic, it's realized knowledge. That's why it's called self-realization. So, as my luck had it, or my karma, not really karma, not, it was beyond karma, as I was fortunate to come in contact, first of all, with somebody who taught me this mantra. It's called the Hare Krishna mantra. I think it's posted somewhere. Yeah, there it is. It's on that sign over there. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. In the corner over there, that red and gold. Very nice. Somebody taught me that mantra. Hare Krishna, Hare. A friend of mine named Patrick Dolan in Denver in 1968. He came to my apartment and introduced me to this mantra. And wow. I said, I was looking for some kind of meditation, you know, something that take my consciousness to a whole new realm where there's just pure bliss. There's no more anxiety. There's no more fear. There's no more confusion. There's no more delusion. Simply a life full of love, full of light, and full of happiness, full of adventure, full of intrigue. Just a delicious experience at every moment. That's what I was hankering for. Of course, I've been told, I worked as a camp, as a summer counselor, teaching guitar lessons to kids. And I remember one of the counselors said, yeah, you got to take the good with the bad. But I didn't like that philosophy, you know. Life is, you know, you get, life is a, you know, is, life is a rose with a lot of thorns on it. You just got to accept the thorns. If you want to enjoy the rose, you got to take the thorns along with it. But I didn't want the thorns. I wanted the thornless rose, you see. I didn't want it. I wanted a life of, my desire was for a life of pure happiness. So I ask you this. Does anybody here like suffering? Raise your hand if you enjoy suffering. Who wants to suffer? No, I don't see one hand going up. The fact is, none of us like to suffer. So I would put forward this argument. Since no one likes to suffer, therefore, suffering is not really natural. It's an unnatural state. How can we understand that? Well, everyone likes water, isn't it? Everyone, does anybody here not drink water? No, we all hanker for water, and water exists. It's natural. If there's a thirst for something, it's natural that that thing exists by nature's way, you see. If there's a thirst for something, the object to satisfy that thirst is there. So in a similar way, just as we have a thirst for water and water exists, we have a thirst for pure happiness with no suffering. Therefore, such a thing does exist. That's my argument, philosophical argument. Since the thirst for water is there and water is there, the thirst for pure happiness with, you know, no thorns on the rose, the thirst for pure happiness is there, therefore there is such a thing as pure happiness. So just like you're in the desert, how do you get to the water? Well, you have to dig a well, because it's there. If you go deep enough anywhere on the earth, you will find water. So Self-realization is the science of how to go deep within yourself to find the water. You see what I'm saying? To find the pure happiness. That's what it is. And so this, what is the drilling process? It's like you can drill down into the earth and get the water. This mantra, this Hare Krishna mantra, is an effective, powerful drill, consciousness drill, or meditational drill, that great saints and sages have used for millions, actually at least for thousands of years, even millions of years. But we have recorded histories that this mantra was used thousands of years ago by persons who were dedicated to realizing themselves, and they achieved success by chanting this mantra. It's not some new invention. It goes back thousands and thousands of years. So by chanting Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, one can actually go deep within oneself and find that platform, that state of consciousness, that state of mind of pure happiness, that you can actually see a reality much on a much higher level than the people around you are seeing it. You're still acting in a normal way. Of course, we do have some people who become monks, but most of our members in our movement, they have ordinary jobs. They're doctors. Like I have a friend who's a fellow devotee of Krishna. He's a lawyer. He's a big attorney in Los Angeles. I just talked to him on the phone yesterday. As soon as he gets his time off from his court work, we're going to go out and do some preaching together. But you can be a lawyer, a doctor. You can be just like we have one of our Hare Krishna peoples in the U.S. Congress in Washington, Tulsi Gabbard from Hawaii. She chants Hare Krishna, and she's a congresswoman in the U.S. House of Representatives, and she's a Hare Krishna chanter. You see, so this is something you can do as a monk or as an ordinary person in the society. You can be single, you can be married, you can be young, you can be old. Doesn't matter. This is something that anybody can do. It doesn't matter whether you're a Christian, a Jew, an agnostic, an atheist, a Buddhist, a Hindu, a Muslim. None of these things matter, because anybody who wants to achieve that state of unlimited happiness, all they have to do is take up the serious practice of chanting Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, and watch the magic happen. It's not something like it's going to happen in front of you. It's something that happens within you. So one who takes up this regular chanting, they will find actually the chanting is enchanting, because it takes you to higher dimensions of consciousness. Some may say, well, you know, it sounds, I've heard so many things, this preacher, that preacher, it just sounds like hype to me. I don't really believe this, you know. I think it's just a bunch of hype. Well, as George Harrison one time said, the proof of the pudding is in the eating. You won't really know unless you try it. Now we all remember the story of the fox and the grapes. The fox saw those grapes are there. They looked really great. Oh, wow, those grapes look so nice. But he kept running. They were so high, and he kept jumping higher and higher. He could never reach the grapes. So he concluded, all the grapes are sour. They're useless. So someone might think, oh, this is just nonsense. Hare Krishna chanting. Is this some nonsense thing? It's just sour grapes philosophy. But anybody who actually tries it, sincerely tries to chant Hare Krishna and experience what it's all about, will, by the grace of Krishna, experience something very sublime. They'll have an awakening within themselves that takes them to higher levels of consciousness. So we encourage everyone, even if you're, whatever you may, your philosophy of life may be, doesn't matter, because this is a universal science. This is not a particular religion. This is a science that applies to anyone who exists. You have a self, you have a personality. So this science of self-realization can be utilized by you to be everything that you can be, to realize your full potential. So what is the science then of how that actually works? At the present moment, we are rooted in a material conception of the self. We take the body to be the self. Well, what's your identity? Well, I'm an American male, or whatever it may be, you see. We're rooted, I'm from such and such country, I'm this, I'm that. But that's only a temporary covering. The actual self is much deeper than that. So when you come to this platform of self-realization, you understand you have an identity beyond your temporary material body. In other words, you're actually deathless. You're not a mortal being. Your body is mortal, that's a fact. But your nature is immortal. You may say, now wait a minute, this sounds like something religious, some kind of religious faith. Although someone of religious faith may agree with me, but I'm telling you this is a scientific fact. Just as I gave the example of the taste for water indicates that water exists, I'm putting forward this argument. Your taste, your desire not to die proves that you are immortal. You see? It's a universal psychology that no one wants to die. Everybody tries to avoid death. That's a fact. And that somebody who's really disturbed may commit suicide, but that's an exception. The fact is that everybody, the universal principle is people don't want to die. You put them in a situation, they'll do everything they can to survive. We value life over death like anything. We do everything we can not to die. If we're sick, we go to a doctor. If you have a terminal disease, you go to the doctor to try to cure it. You try to be, everyone's trying to beat death. That's a fact. So this is, if my argument is this, if you were actually a mortal being, then death would be a piece of cake. Who cares? It's my nature to die, so who cares if I die? It's in my nature, it's natural to die. So I don't mind. I'm going to die anyway, that's my nature. But actually death is not natural. Therefore we try to avoid death in every step. Everything we can do to avoid death, we do then. So the science of self-realization actually takes you to a platform beyond death. It takes you into a non-material spiritual reality in which you experience your identity beyond your material body. So this is pretty powerful stuff. In the material world, you know, you saw it as a young kid, all excited to see the world, jumping and dancing. I saw a child the other day just in the airport. He was just dancing, joyful, just dancing down the down the sidewalk in the airport. A little child, all enthusiastic, dancing and joyful. But you come old, you get like, you become bent over and all like morose. But this is simply due to misidentification with the body. If you can realize your eternal anti-material spiritual nature by this process of self-realization, then your natural youthfulness will always stay with you. And I don't care if you're 50, 60, 70, 80, or 90, you're going to feel like a youth within your heart. You achieve a state of youthfulness that stays actually, not only does it stay with you, but the self-realization science becomes perfected over time. Just like a guitar player, you see. He gets more expert as the time goes by. As the years pass by playing the guitar, he becomes more expert at playing the guitar. So anyone who seriously practices the science of self-realization, they become more expert in that as time goes by. Because it's something you do every day, you see. The more you practice it, the more you become expert. That means you become younger every day. Anybody who's in this pathway of self-realization, they realize their eternal youthfulness, And that youthfulness becomes more firmly established every day. They become more happy, more full of love, more full of peace, more full of joy on a regular daily basis. So just like in the early days of America, when there was a Spanish flag flying over Florida, not the American flag, the Spanish flag, one explorer named was Ponce de Leon, and he was looking for the fountain of youth. Well, he looked in the wrong place, because we have it right here. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. This is the fountain of youth. You may say, well, I don't believe it. Well, the taste and the proof of the pudding is in the eating. Here I am, an old senior citizen, but I feel like I'm 23 years old. I'm experiencing it every day. I'm 67, going on 68, and feel like I'm 23. Because by this process, you regain your original, eternal, youthful nature. So this book is talking about, this is actually giving you tips on how to become in that self-realization consciousness. And we'll read the verse again in English. A sober person who can tolerate the urge to speak, the mind's demands, the actions of anger and the urges of the tongue, belly, and genitals is qualified to make disciples all over the world. So in other words, you become actually self-realized, you become a qualified teacher. You don't have to have a degree from the University of Texas or University of Missouri. You don't require a degree or a license from the government, because this is totally beyond anything of this material world. When you actually become situated in your eternal youthful identity by the process of self-realization, you become qualified then to train others how to do the same thing. Once you learn how to bake a cake, you can teach others how to bake a cake. You see what I'm saying? When you're an expert at baking cake, you can show other people how to do it too. So when you become self-realized, you become qualified. That's what this verse is saying. That one who has actually become self-realized, now he can go all over the world and make disciples. He can make disciples all over the world and teach them how to become self-realized. So what are the different aspects then of being a self-realized person as described here? There are six different urges. The urges of the mind, our words, our anger, our tongue, the belly, and the genitals, you see. In normal, everyday material consciousness, people are carried away by these different urges. Some people, they're chatterboxes. Once they start talking, they can't stop. They just go and chatter. They're called chatterboxes, you see. All they can do is talk. They have no control over their tongue. They just chatter. They gossip. It's not really so important what they're saying, but they get scared if it's quiet. Actually, I was sitting with somebody one time in the car, and I'm just sitting there silently enjoying the wonderful peace and happiness of being Krishna conscious. But this person was saying, they said, Gurudev, say something. They couldn't handle being quiet, you see. So some people just like to talk. They like to hear some talking going on just because maybe things be quiet. They get scared. But this means they're not self-realized, you see. Because when you're self-realized, you can talk. Just like I'm giving a big lecture here. I'm scheduled to speak for an hour and a half today, and I didn't make any notes. I remember my pastor at my church when I grew up, it's Reverend Joe Owen at St. Luke's Presbyterian Church. He spent a whole week every week in his pastor's study smoking on his pipe. He's got a big legal pad, with these yellow legal pads. He spent a whole week writing this sermon down. A whole week he struggled for hours writing the whole thing down on a legal pad. You get up there on Sunday and read the thing and just go to sleep, you know. This is too much, you know. There's no life there, you know. But here I am giving an hour and a half lecture. I didn't study 1 minute. I didn't write down any notes, you see, because when you become self-realized, it's all there. You have it. You just share it. So as we become awakened in self-realization, you can speak unlimitedly when it's required. If someone asks you to give a 10-hour seminar on self-realization, no problem. Just give me a mic and let me go. You see, 10 hours. Easily 10 hours. Actually, the original dissertation of self-realization, as described, one of the original ones, was 5,000 years ago. There was a great saint named Shukadev, and there was the king. And he was informed that death was coming, so he wanted to prepare himself by becoming self-realized. So he sat down on the bank of the sacred river, and the teacher gave a 7-day seminar. I'm not talking about breaks for, you know, go home and have a good sleep and have dinner. No, 7 days straight. We're talking 7 times 24-hour dissertation, which is 160. You have any math majors here? 160. What's 7 times 24? 168? Yes. Let's see. 7 times 20 is 140. And then 7 times... Yeah, 168 hours, he went on describing in great minute detail the science of self-realization for 168 hours. This is only not even 168 minutes. My dissertation today is not even 168 minutes. He went on for 168 hours with no problem. Not that he had to take some notes. Well, what I'm supposed to say now, no, it's all just coming out of the heart, you see. So one who actually becomes, you know, properly situated in self-realization, they can speak for 168 hours if it's required, or they can remain silent for 168 hours, you see, in complete happiness. You can talk or not talk, and it doesn't matter. It's compared to a... sometimes we see, just like in Texas, where it's kind of dry, you see. In Florida, it's maybe different, but in Texas, it's kind of dry. But we have rivers there that are seasonal, you know. When the rains come, rivers flow. When the rains don't come, it's a dry riverbed, you see. So those who are self-realized, they can speak profusely when it's required, or they can remain completely quiet also when it's required. Prabhupada calls them the great reformers. The great reformers can speak when necessary and remain quiet when it is remained necessary. So it's interesting, Prabhupada uses the name great reformers. The point is this. They're the greatest reform in the world needed right now, which will solve all the problems of the world. I'm talking about economic problems, political problems, interreligious problems, sociological problems, health problems, environmental problems, every single problem which is besieging the human society right now. The government leaders are scratching their heads trying to figure out how to solve them. All of these problems will be solved simply by this self-realization process. So therefore, the self-realized teachers who travel all over the world to teach this science, they are called the great reformers. They are the greatest reformers. And they are actually the only true reformers in the human society. So, the first thing is, those who awaken in the self-realization pathway, they speak as necessary, and they do not speak when necessary. They can simply hear also. They can go on hearing for 168 hours. Whether you speak about self-realization or you hear about it, the benefit is the same. It's like I'm getting some benefit by telling you about self-realization process. You are also getting the benefit by hearing. We're both getting the equal benefit of this discourse. Not that I'm getting so much benefit. No. We're all getting the equal benefit. Whether I'm speaking about it or I'm hearing about it, the benefit is equal. So that's the first item, you see. The second item is the mind's demands. The mind, you know, we think about so many things. Some of us, I remember one songwriter, he said, if my thought dreams could be seen, they would stick my head in a guillotine. So, you know, some of us have some really problems with dirty thoughts, you know. But the fact is, when you become self-realized, your mind becomes clean. Even in the Bible, Jesus says that even if you think, even if you look lustfully upon a woman as if you violated her, you see. So, you see, to have dirty thoughts is not proper. But when you become, when you actually chant this Hare Krishna mantra, you see, seriously, then all this kind of anger or lust or greed or envy, all this stuff that, you know, creates so much anxiety within the heart, it goes away. You become like an innocent child again, you see. Wouldn't you like to be like an innocent child, completely joyful, you don't hate anybody, you're not lusty, you're not angry, you're not greedy. The innocence of a child, you see. Simply by chanting this Hare Krishna mantra, you can achieve the innocence of a child. So there's the mind, words, anger. When the mind is controlled, then naturally anger will not be there. One is not overwhelmed by anger. And then the tongue. Well, this is a big problem in America, especially in an opulent country like America, where people can, some people have become so huge, they become so fat, that they require practically a Mack truck, what is it? One of these machines that lifts things up to get up from the couch. They require, in fact, they can't even get up from the couch without a machine to aid them become so huge. Couch potatoes, you see. So an uncontrolled tongue in terms of eating, it can be very problematic. Why do people eat? You see, instead of eating to live, they live to eat. They try to eat every chance they can get. Eat, because they're so miserable. They feel a little temporary happiness when they're eating, so they just find ways they can eat. They become big fat, they die young, their heart is strained. It's a shame that people are so uncontrolled in their eating. They're so miserable, they just want to eat. I even knew one person, they would eat and then they would vomit them, they would regurgitate, and they would eat some more and regurgitate. And it's so miserable situation, you see. But one who becomes awakened in self-realization, they can eat, but they eat when they're required to eat. They're very happy to take nice foodstuffs. And when there's required, they enjoy eating. But they're satisfied with just whatever is required to stay healthy. They don't have to, they eat to live. They don't live to eat, you see. So their tongue becomes controlled. And naturally then the belly. Your belly is not overindulged nor overindulged. When the tongue is regulated, the belly is properly regulated automatically. And the last thing I mentioned is the genitals. Now that's one thing that's driving a lot of people crazy nowadays. We have people, these rapists going mad, you know, raping women. It's horrible. We read in the newspapers some, on the internet, some guy, he kidnapped some young girls. He kept them as sex slaves in his basement for like 20 years until one of them escaped. Just because of uncontrolled genitals, you see. Horrible things. Because of this urge of the genitals, people do all kinds of horrible things to abuse people, you see. It's horrible. But when you become awakened in self-realization, well, you're happy to use the genitals for their purpose, to propagate kids. If you want to have kids, yeah, the genitals are there. You use them. That's all. And if you don't want to have any kids, hey, I have other things to do. You know, genitals don't dominate my life. It's not that my sex desire is in control of me. No, I'm in control of my sex desire. I use it when I want to use it, and when I don't feel like it, and I don't have any use for it, I don't bother with it. It's not necessary. You can be very healthy and happy without ever having sex, even. Just like, just like that. What's his name? Dalai Lama. He's never had sex in his life. He's very happy, very popular, famous man. He's never had sex in his whole life. Dalai Lama, you see. Sex is not required to be happy. All you have to do is really realize who you are. That I'm the eternal being situated within this body. So let's take a little bit closer look then. What is the actual nature of that living being within the body, the eternal self? We read in the Vedic wisdom, what is the actual position of that living being? It's interesting to note, the living entity is situated within the heart of the body. And I've done this experiment many times. I will take the audience and say, okay, point to your nose, point to your ear, point to your knee, point to yourself. And where do people point? They point right here. You can make 90% of the people immediately point here. Why? Why don't you point here? They science tell us that actually your consciousness is in the brain. Why don't they point to the brain? Why do they point here? Why do people intuitively point here when I say point to yourself? Because that's actually where the self is situated. You try it sometime with a group of people who don't know about it and ask them, you know, point to your ear, point to your nose, point to your knee, point to yourself, and practically everyone will immediately point here, you see, because that's where the self is situated. The actual self is a particle, and actually some scientists came close to discovering this. This is back way back in 1959. These scientists got the Nobel Prize for formulating the theory about the antimaterial particle. They didn't realize what they had stumbled upon, but actually they had come to the actual self. You are a particle of antimaterial energy. That's who you really are, sir. You're a particle of antimaterial energy, and you're seated right there in the heart of your body. That's who you really are. You're antimatter. You're not matter, you're antimatter. It's very nicely described in our book, The Easy Journey to Other Planets, in detail, what I'm explaining now in brief. But you are an antimaterial particle, and you are actually very powerful. You, the particle of antimaterial energy, are so powerful, you can animate, your whole body is being animated by the energy situated in you, that particle. You see? You're animating this huge body compared to just a little infinitesimal particle. In Sanskrit, it's called the Atma. That's who you actually are. And it's seated right here in the heart of your body. Where does your heart get all that energy to go beating, 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 50, 60, 70, 80, 90, 100 years, your heart is beating, beating, beating. Are you making it beat? Oh, I got to work my heart. Okay, heart. No, you're not making your heart beat. It's going on automatically by the energy it's getting from that particle seated within it, you see. There's so much energy. Just think of the energy in the atomic bomb, you see. But I'm telling you right now, there's more energy in your Atma than there is in the atomic bomb. There's more energy. There's more energy than the atom bomb. Right there, you yourself is an atomic particle situated within the heart. And there's more power energy there than all the atomic bombs or hydrogen bombs that have ever been blown up in the history of the world. You see? More energy. So that's where you get this energy to do so many things. Go here, go there, keep your heart beating. Your whole brain becomes activated. You can be creative. You can write poetry. You can dance. You can sing. You can cook. You can start a business. You can be a first-class employee. All these talents and abilities, this energy is all coming out of that little particle. You see? All coming out of that little particle. And because people don't realize it, therefore they get frustrated. But when you actually understand who you are, that you're that particle of antimaterial energy, and you actually learn how to totally situate yourself in that consciousness. It's called Krishna consciousness, you see. When you learn how to situate yourself in that consciousness, then you become a very powerful, very intelligent, very compassionate, very joyous being who experiences the highest happiness at every minute, and who can give the highest happiness to those with whom you come in contact. You see, this is what the world needs. We need people who are self-realized, Krishna conscious. We need self-realized people in the world. That's why we have a society. It's called the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. That's why one of our books is called The Science of Self-Realization. Because we know what the world needs now more than anything, you see. There's so many things going wrong on this planet right now. You have the ISIS crisis, you have the environmental crisis, you have this crisis, that crisis, the going on, the economic crisis. Greece is on the verge of collapse, economic collapse right now in Greece. There's so many problems going on. The politicians don't know how to solve the problems. Only one politician has little idea. That's Tulsi Gabbard. She's just one vote, you see. So we need to increase the number of self-realized people so we can the whole House of Representatives and the Senate and the White House, we can have self-realized people in every position. That's what we need. So this is not really a religion. This is an educational institution. We want to train people how to become self-realized. Just like we got Tulsi Gabbard in the House of Representatives. Now we have to have a majority in every single House and Senate and Parliament in the whole world. And once we do that, then we can immediately solve the problems of the world. You see, because right now it's the days of democracy. Formerly there were kings who ruled, you see. But the kings became so corrupt, the people got rid of them because the kings became no good, because the kings were not self-realized. But in former days, we're talking before 5,000 years ago, we read in the histories, the kings were self-realized. And because of that, the citizens they felt like this is our father and we're their kids. He's protecting us. No one hated the king. No one wanted to kill the king. Nobody wanted to get rid of the king because the king was like the father of everyone. The king loved the citizens. The citizens loved the king. And there was peace and prosperity throughout the whole kingdom. The whole world was like that before 5,000 years ago. So you can't turn the clock back and establish monarchy. That wouldn't work. But now democracy is a thing, so we can make democracy good now by getting self-realized, Krishna-conscious people in the positions of government, you see, all over the world. People who I understand the real nature of the self, that the self really needs to be connected with the Supreme Self. Now that's another aspect I'm going to get to. When you actually realize your spiritual or anti-material nature as an eternal being, then you can go even deeper, you see. The first level of understanding your non-material identity, that's called Brahman realization, okay? But then when you go even deeper, just like you get your bachelor's degree, then you get a master's degree, then you get a PhD, you see. So the bachelor's degree, that's like Brahman realization. And then the master's degree is like Paramatma realization. But then the highest level, the PhD, that's called Bhagavan realization. So here we're taking you to the PhD level. We'll teach you all the levels. We'll take you all the way to the top. So once you go even deeper into the self-realization process, then you actually discover what is the origin of all existence. How I, the individual particle, came into being. How is I continue to exist and not just die out like some firefly that flies into the fire and dies in the campfire at night, you see. How is it I continue to exist? By what power have I come into being? By what power is my being maintained? By what power is my being continue to exist eternally? That inquiry then brings us a little to a deeper, even deeper level of the self-realization science, and that is to discover the Param Atma. You see, you are the Atma, which is the Sanskrit word for that particle of anti-material energy, the Atma. But then you discover there's a Param Atma, a supreme self, from whom all these individual selves are coming out, just like the sun is emanating particles of sun energy all over the universe. That original person, the supreme person, the supreme Atma, the Param Atma, you see, is emanating these living entities throughout all of existence. I'm one of them, you're one of them. So now we enter an even more amazing dimension, that when the individual living being reconnects with that supreme original living being in pure love, then you enter into a state of unparalleled joy and happiness, unparalleled, unexcelled, unparalleled, inconceivable happiness. Just like when you water the root of a tree, all the leaves and branches are nourished. Or when you feed your belly, your whole body becomes nourished, you see. So when you actually, when you, the individual Atma, when you connect with that supreme Atma, the Paramatma, or at least in Sanskrit language, Krishna, you see, in love, then just as you water the root and water every branch of the tree, just as you feed your belly and nourish every single portion of your body, when you give your love to the Supreme Person, when the individual living being gives his love or her love to the Supreme Person, then your love is distributed to all living entities throughout all of existence. Now, we all have experienced that by love we become happy. See, when you grow up, you love your mom and dad, you see. And that brings you happiness. And then, lo and behold, what happens? You get a brother or a sister. Like, I was the only child at first, and then I had a twin brother and sister. Bob and Ann came along later on, you see. So first I learned to love mom and dad, and then it was just the three of us. For me, as a little Stevie Bridge, that was my whole world. It was just me and mom and dad. That was the whole world, you see. That's all I knew. But then my world expanded. The world of three became the world of five. Bob and Ann were born, twins, you see. And then I had, and it was five of us, you see. So the love, as your love expands, then your consciousness becomes broader and your happiness, your joy increases. And then I was sent to school and I learned, well, there's Tillman Elementary, there's Mrs. Schlager, and there's all those other students. And you learn how to have loving relationships with more people. And gradually you learn, well, there's more than just your little town, Kirkwood, Missouri, where I was grew up. Then there's the whole United States of America, you see. You learn to love your fellow Americans, you see. You go to the ball game and you sing, you sing the national anthem. You get goosebumps when they play the national anthem. You know, you get all excited. Yeah, I'm an American. I love American people. Americans are great. America's the greatest country in the whole world. You see, you get this America, love America consciousness. Okay, that's the next step. But then you go higher. Maybe you travel overseas or something, or an exchange student comes. You know, you're in high school and you. And you make a friend with somebody from France or Germany or from Palestine or something like that, or from Finland, you see. And you go, wow, there's other people. I remember I worked at a summer camp in New York, and they had all kinds of counselors. They had one who had escaped from Hungary during the communist days. He walked through the wilderness and escaped. And he was really a cool guy. Wow, here's somebody from the communist world, and he's really a nice guy, you see. And so, in other words, and there was another guy from Norway, yeah, Pella, another counselor named Pella from Norway. So now all of a sudden you find out, well, you know, America's good, but hey, people all over the world are great. Human beings are wonderful, you see. So develop a higher consciousness. You learn how to love all of humanity. And then you realize, and then you think about those poor animals in the slaughterhouse, you know. You see that nice cow out there mooing contentedly in the field, and then you heard the farmer slipped him off and have him murdered in a slaughterhouse so you can eat his flesh, and you go, well, wait a minute. See, a lot of people are becoming vegetarians or vegans nowadays because they go to even higher consciousness of all living beings. Why I should only love humans, you see? Why can't I love all the creatures that God has given, you see? My pet dog was so nice. You can have a pet cow also, you see. Why only dogs are wonderful? Why not the cows, you see? They're also wonderful creatures. They give me milk. I enjoy the ice cream. I enjoy the yogurt. I enjoy the milk. You can take a mango and blend it up with some sugar and milk and get a mango smoothie. It's the ultimate treat, you see. Why you should kill that creature who's giving you the mango smoothie, you see what I'm saying? You should be some gratitude. I grew up on milk. The cow nourished me with her milk breast. I would never think of killing my first mother. She nourished me with her breast milk. Why would I want to kill the second mother, the cow, you see? I should see, well, there's mother number one, I love her. Mother number two, I love her too, you see? So then one's consciousness goes even higher to include all living beings. I'm walking down the street, there's an ant there. I won't step on the ant. I'll try to avoid the ant if I can, you know. He's got his family. He's going out to gather some food for bring to his wife and kids. I don't know what he's doing, but he's a living being just like me. Why want to step on the ant and try to... So then one's love, his circle of love expands even more. So the point is, the more you expand your circle of love, the more you become happy. And then when you expand it to the ultimate degree, you come back to that original person who's the source of all existence, you see. And then your love becomes perfect, you see. That's called self-realization, the highest level of self-realization, Bhagavan realization. Now you give your love to that Supreme Person, and automatically your love goes to every living entity. This is actually very efficient, because if you try to love everybody in a piecemeal fashion, it's very difficult. I don't even know everybody. I mean, even in my block down in Austin, Texas, I don't know everybody on the block. Most of them are pretty impersonal, you know. I mean, few of them will say good morning from across the street, but most of them, they don't even say a word to you. They just come in, they shut the door, and that's it. You never know who their name is, you know. It didn't used to be that way in America, but now it's becoming very impersonal. You can live in a neighborhood for 20 years and not even know your next door neighbor. Can you imagine how impersonal we've gotten in this country? So it's hard to actually love everyone. You can't even relate with them as a person because of the impersonal nature of the society. But here's the beauty of the self-realization process. When you actually connect with the Supreme Person in love, you see, then automatically you have genuine loving feelings for everybody, just everybody else, just because they're living beings and they're part and parcel of that Supreme Person. So when you get to that level, then you actually become perfect, become a perfect being who is perfect in love, perfect in knowledge, perfect in harmony, perfect in joyousness, perfect in everything. And that's what we teach you here, how to achieve that state. Our founding a spiritual master here, his founder Acharya, we have a nice statue of him. And actually, it's not just a statue, it has spiritual power. This is His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. He brought this science to the Western world, which was greatly in need of it back in the 60s. And he came with only 40 rupees, it's about $10 at the time. And he had a mission. His spiritual master gave him the mission to spread this Krishna consciousness, self-realization science in the English-speaking world, because his guru could not tolerate to see a whole world where people are miserable. I mean, if you have, you know, let's say you're in a country and there people are dying from an epidemic and you have the serum to cure them, wouldn't you want to distribute it? Or would you not care? I'm just going on vacation, you know. No. If you had the serum to actually cure all the people from the epidemic, you would want to give it, inoculate everybody with that serum, you see. So his spiritual master, Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur, he had this medicine or this message or this Krishna consciousness, you see, which can solve all the problems of the world. So he gave this order to his disciple, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, that you should spread this to the English-speaking world, because English is the predominant language now. I know, because I'm traveling all over the world. My wife and I, Vishnu Priya Devi Dasi, we go to about 20 different countries. And a lot of them are, you know, English is not the language, but there's always a translator there who can translate your language into English, your lecture into English. Wherever I go, I can go to China, they translate it to English. I can go to Russia, they translate it to English. I can go to Finland, they translate it to English. I go to Estonia, Latvia, Lithuania, they translate it to English, you see. I go to Germany, so I've gone to Germany. I've gone to South America, you know, so they speak Espanol, Spanish. There's always an English translator. You go to India, where there's they speak Hindi. Somebody can translate the Hindi also if necessary. I give classes for Hindi audiences in India also. And somebody comes to translate it from English into Hindi. So English is indeed the universal language in the world today. What do airline pilots have to learn? Do you know what language they have to use when they communicate with the tower? Every airline pilot in the world has to become illiterate in English, because English is the language used to communicate between the airplane and the control tower. They all have to speak English. And then it doesn't matter if they're Russian, German, French, Spanish. English is the language used in airport airline communications, you see. English. So he was given the order to spread this message in English. And that was indeed a very intelligent order. We can see that his spiritual master, Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasvati, had great foresight to know where the world culture is heading, that English is the predominant language now, you see. So we have, I've been asked to speak for an hour and a half, and I've gone for an hour and 15 minutes, so we have 15 minutes left, and maybe you all have some questions for me. Anybody have some questions? Yeah.
You are talking about self-realization. Now we are reading Bhagavad Gita, Krishna tells we are a soul, we are not a body. So when we act, we need to imagine that way and act with actions. All this, when you start.
Actually, I have to apologize. I have deafness. My hearing aid battery went deaf, I'm trying to find another battery. I lost one ear. I'm looking for my hearing aid batteries right now. I went dead in the middle of the lecture. What is this? I have found my batteries right here. Help me understand this question. If I get my battery in, I should be okay. Get this battery back in now.
The question is,
there we go.
We know we are a spirit soul, we are not the body. But experientially, I did not realize that self. But so every action, I need to imagine that I am the soul, I am not the body. In that way, I need to act, create action, something like that.
We understand that we are the spirit soul, not the body. So, but the action, we are just theoretically not understanding this, but not actually. So by doing every action, then we should think about it, that we are doing this as a soul, not as the body. Is that a question?
Right now, experientially, I did not.
How do you experience your transcendental nature?
Nature, or like every action, say when I do transactions in the world, always I need to think in my mind that I'm the soul, I'm not the body.
You don't have to, actually not required to think that way. It happens automatically as soon as you connect. Now see, for the Brahman realized person, it's very difficult. He has to always try to, you know, re-engineer his viewpoint. It's difficult. But when you actually come to the point of Bhagavan realization, where you're giving your love to that Supreme Person, it happens automatically, you see. The mind has to be situated on the transmittal platform. That's a fact. Now, the Brahman realized person, he will just try to mechanically say, you know, I'm not the body, I'm not the body, I'm the spiritual being, I'm the spiritual being. That's a mechanical thing. But the Bhagavan realized person, the higher level person, he just knows, I love that Supreme Person. He learns all about that Supreme Person in the Vedic literatures. His name is Krishna. He has all these activities. This is what he looks like. This is what he does. This is what he enjoys. This is what he doesn't like. You actually learn. Just like, I'll give you a mundane example. In the material world, sometimes people fall in love with a movie star, you see. Then they're always checking out what their star is up to. Where are they? What's the latest movie? You know, got to go to that movie. They're totally absorbed in that movie star. They fall in love with the movie star, and they're totally in love. They have the pictures of the movie star and their posters in their bedroom, you know. They wake up thinking about their movie star. So in the same way, on the Bhagavan realization platform, one understands the Supreme Person, Krishna. And is always thinking about Krishna. And because of that, he's automatically situated in the spiritual platform. Without any, just by being having this love for Krishna, the person, he's automatically situated in the spiritual platform. You may say, well, how do I actually engineer that to come to that point? And that's the beauty of this Hare Krishna chant, you see. It is called Nama Avatar. The Supreme Person has fully manifested himself by divine power and potency in the form of transcendental sound vibration. In other words, by chanting Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, you are directly associating with that Supreme Person. So when you're in the contact of that Supreme Person, you don't have to artificially, you know, remind yourself that you're not your body. You will automatically act on the spiritual platform just by being in remembrance of that person. Does that make clear to you? Yes, when the self-realized person understands me, myself, the individual person, I'm an emanation of that Supreme Person. It's like I gave the example in my talk, how the sun is emanating so much, so many sun rays all over the universe. So each one of you is a ray of that Supreme Person. You exist because that Supreme Person is emanating you from Himself right now. You don't exist because your mom and dad wanted to have a baby. That explains your material body. But that doesn't explain you, you see. You're the spiritual being situated within that body. Now one say, well, that someone may say, but I don't agree with you. I think I am the body. But let's analyze it. Let's look at it. When you were a little baby boy, you see, you had a certain body, you had a certain group of chemicals. Now you're an adult. Are the chemicals the same? No, they're a different, it's a different bag of chemicals. They're completely different. So if you are that body, then you'd be a different person now than you were then, right? But you're not, because you can remember things you did when you were a little kid. You see, we can remember, I remember I was a little boy back in about 1949 in the baby crib, looking over the bars of my crib at a little thing called a television set. It was a new technology, a little black and white thing about that big, called the TV set. You see, I remember looking in my crib, looking out at, what is that thing out there, that glowing thing out there, the TV set, you see. So we can remember things, and we were little kids, but the bodies have changed completely. The chemicals are totally different. So how I can remember those chemicals and the chemicals in this bag now, they're completely different chemicals, how I can remember that? Because the self and the body are two different things, you see. So when you actually awaken your Krishna consciousness or your self-realization consciousness on the Bhagavan realization level, you automatically act in such a way that is transcendental to this material existence, even while you're expertly acting within it as a businessman, as a politician, as a student. This is the amazing thing. You can be otherworldly and at the same time be better in this world than anybody else. That's the amazing thing about it. Sometimes people think if you become self-realized, you become a space case, you know. You just sit around and go om all day long, and you can't earn a living, you can't, you have good relationships. This is a misunderstanding. That may be true on the Brahman realization platform, but on the Bhagavan realization platform, we see so many examples. It's like Bhaktivinoda Thakur, one of our great teachers. He was a highly valued employee of the British government during British rule of India. The highest position an Indian could hold in the British government was magistrate. So he went all the way to the top. He hit the top of the career ladder, and he was so expert. Whenever it'd be some trouble in the village, they would send Bhaktivinoda Thakur to solve the problems. When he was off work, he was going deep into the, he was writing so many books, so many songs about the self-realization science. He was on the highest level of self-realization But then his heart, when he went to work, he was the best manager that the British government had. In the whole of India, he was the topmost manager. So it's not that you become incompetent, you see. When you become Krishna conscious, you become more competent than anyone else, actually. You see. You become more competent. Even my own experience, when I was a college student, you know, I did okay. A's, B's, a few C's here and there. But then after I became Krishna conscious, I took some courses for different reasons, and I made straight A's, you see. My whole academic performance, I became a straight A student after I became Krishna conscious, you see. So when you become Krishna conscious, actually, even though you're rooted in a higher reality beyond the material existence, within the material existence, you become more expert than everybody else. So but Krishna conscious doesn't make you a loser. It makes you a winner. Krishna conscious is not for losers. This is for the highest level of achievers, actually. This is the highest level of achievers, you see, Krishna consciousness. So we have about 5 minutes left. Any other questions? You're talking about a discourse like this discourse where there's a speaker speaking about self-realization, the hearers are hearing about it. For it to actually be effective, the hearer has to be potent and the speaker has to be potent. It's like when a man and a woman come together to try to have a kid, you see. The husband has to be potent and the wife has to be potent. If they're both potent, they'll have a nice, healthy child, you see. So in the same way that the speaker has to be potent and the hearer has to be potent. If you actually are a potent hearer who seriously tunes in to what's being spoken and says, okay, there's something new here, I've never heard about this before, it's kind of mind-blowing, but let me just tune in, you see. Let me be in the mood of an innocent child and try to learn something here today. You see, let me just tune in. Then it's amazing. You'll be amazed by what will happen if you actually just say, well, I don't know about this. It's completely foreign to me. It sounds kind of weird and strange, but hey, I'm an open-minded person. You know, I know there's all kind of cultures and philosophies out there, and I don't know everything. Let me just be open-hearted and tune in and try to learn something new today that I didn't know before, you see. And if you do that, your life will be enriched. Your life will be enhanced. We're not asking people that you have to join our religion or anything like that. We're just saying try to learn something more about yourself. That's all. Just try to learn something more about yourself so that you can be a happier, more complete, more satisfied person. We guarantee you that if you tune in to what we're saying and try to learn something from it, you'll walk out of this discourse a much better person, a much happier person than you ever were in your whole life. We guarantee it, because the potency in what we're teaching is unlimited. It's unparalleled in the history of the world. There's never been any knowledge like this that can solve every single problem of the whole human society. So it will solve all of your problems. It will solve all the problems of the world. So just try to tune in and turn on to the higher level of consciousness you already have within you. You have a buried treasure within your heart of unlimited value. We're giving you the shovel and teaching you how to dig and connect with that inner self that you have been buried in your heart for your whole life. That burying of it has denied you of so much happiness, so much peace, so much success in life. You have been denied because you were never taught how to connect with the self within. But we're now teaching you, we're not charging any money. Actually, we could charge you at least easily $1,000 for this seminar. That's how valuable this knowledge is. We could easily charge you $10,000 for this seminar today. But we're giving it away absolutely free because we love you. We care about you. We want you to become happy. We don't want you to be unhappy. We want you to be self-realized, to be Krishna conscious, to fully realize your full potential as an eternal living being. So we have a couple of minutes left. Any more questions maybe coming in from our internet audience? No questions from the internet audience. What about from our Kansas City audience? Yes, sir. Robert?
Could you just explain a little bit about Bhagavan, the meaning of...
I've used the term Bhagavan realization. There's Brahman realization where you realize that I'm an anti-material particle, I'm a spiritual being. But then you take it two notches higher to the ultimate level called Bhagavan realization. What does Bhagavan mean? It's a Sanskrit word. Sanskrit is an incredibly amazing language because every single syllable of Sanskrit has meaning. Bhaga means opulence, and van means one who possesses. So that supreme person, the source of all existence, he possesses all opulences in full. So what are opulences? What are, in other words, an opulence is some wealthy, valuable thing, you see. What are the wealthy, valuable things in this world? Well, let's look at some examples. Somebody's really powerful, you see. Just like if President Obama walked in today, the most powerful man in America right now, President Obama, you see. If he walked in, everyone, oh, President Obama's here. Then I can shake his hand, get my picture taken with President Obama, where I can show all my friends back in, you know, in Muskogee, I met President Obama. It'd be a big day for me. I met the President of the United States. Got to share some words with him. Yeah? So if somebody's very powerful, that's attractive. Or somebody's beautiful. Miss America comes in, you see. Or some famous movie star, you know. Some beautiful person comes. Beauty queen, you know. Oh, here's my picture with Miss America, you see. Or Miss Universe. Wow, going a nudge higher to Miss Universe. And then if somebody's very renounced, it's like Dalai Lama, for example. Oh, I met Dalai Lama. He's very renounced, you see. So that's considered also an opulence. Power, beauty, renunciation, and knowledge. Somebody, if Einstein came back today from the dead, and you could have you have your picture with Einstein. Wow, I met Einstein. E equals MC squared. We had an interesting talk. He had really spoke some highly intelligent things. I didn't understand it completely, but it was amazing what he said. I had a conversation with Einstein today, you see. Someone's very knowledgeable or wealthy. Wow, Bill Gates. I was out walking my dog in the park, and who was out there jogging but Bill Gates. And I talked with Bill Gates, multi-billionaire. Wow, he's going to lend me $1 million to start a business. Fantastic. I met Bill Gates. So if someone is really wealthy, that's attractive too. And if somebody's famous, oh, Paul McCartney. I was in the airport, and I got on the plane, and there was Paul McCartney. You see? Wow, I got his autograph. You see, Paul McCartney from the Beatles, you know, wow, some famous singer. Wow, fantastic. So if somebody is powerful, they're beautiful, they're renowned, they're knowledgeable, they're wealthy, they're famous, this is attractive, you see. Really attractive. So just imagine there's one person who has it all, you see. He has unlimited power, he has unlimited beauty, unlimited renunciation, unlimited knowledge, unlimited wealth, unlimited fame. Somebody's got it all. Boy, then he's called Bhagavan. The one who has all of it. He's got all the opulences in full. He's called Bhagavan. So who is Bhagavan? The person who is the origin of all existence. Because all the opulences are simply emanating out of him. You see? So we according to the ancient scriptures, there is indeed a person who is Bhagavan, the source of all opulences. And he has unlimited names. Some call him Allah. Some call him Krishna, some call him Jehovah, some call him Buddha, some call him Adonai. There's a supreme person who's the source of all opulence. And he's known by millions of names in millions of languages. But in the Sanskrit language, it's the original civilized language in this universe. There are unlimited names also in the Sanskrit language for that supreme person. But of all these names, there is one name which is considered to be the topmost name. Because this name includes all the other names within it. And that name is Krishna, you see. So that's why we like to chant Hare Krishna. But if somebody wants to chant Allah, we love our Muslim brothers, we love our Christian brothers. or somebody's just an agnostic, they're just kind of open, no, I don't really know. We love everybody here because we see that everybody is our brothers and sisters. We're all coming from the same place. We're all coming from Krishna, the Supreme Person. He is the origin of all existence, and we're all part and parcel of Him. So, just like now, I'm meeting some new people. Yesterday, I met Divija Manigura's mom and dad. They're sitting here today. So I immediately can love them, you see. I can immediately love them. Understanding I have an eternal relationship with them because we're all part and parcel of the Supreme. It's not that we're strangers. Actually, we may seem like strangers. I never met them before. I shook their hands yesterday in the parking lot over at the Best Western Hotel. But actually, we have a relationship that goes back into eternity. You see, because we're all part of that Supreme Person. We're all connected. I have a spiritual connection with them, you see, and that goes back for all of eternity. And so when you awaken to this Bhagavan realization or Krishna consciousness, then you actually you can feel love and a connection with all living beings throughout all of existence. So that gives you a little bit more understanding about Bhagavan, is it? So actually our time is up. We've gone 5 minutes over time. And everybody has their schedules, their things they're doing, so I won't keep you here any longer. We'll go ahead and adjourn here, but I just really want to thank all of you for coming today, and I hope that you at least could glean a little bit of benefit from this discourse. And we thank you all very much for coming. Hare Krishna.